Did you ever think about DBS?
I mean, it crossed my mind initially, but I never really thought I was much of a candidate for it. And then also in terms of, you know, isn't it more of a
Why did you think you weren't a candidate for it?
I always thought it was more of a tremor-based kind of tremor. Okay. But I thought when I was in med school, it used to be have to be 5 years diagnosed before you were even a candidate, I think.
So yeah.
I think that's changed. I think you've relaxed that a little bit. So anyway.
Sort of, but I think it's still the same, but I don't know.
I was right around... I was right around five.
Yeah.
I think.
So I haven't been diagnosed that long. So yeah.
When were you diagnosed?
2021, summertime. So coming up 4 years.
Okay.
I was 40 years old.
I'm a big proponent of it, so
I know. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, I know. But you're gonna share with us the Vialiv, right?
Yep, I'll talk about that. Yep, talk about treatment from start to finish and everything in between.
All right. Welcome to The Secret Life of Parkinson's, a podcast created by people living with Parkinson's to help break the stigma of a disease no one likes to talk about. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Krauser and Brian Baker. Well, welcome, Nick.
Good to be here.
And he's the youngest now, right?
Oh, are you? Well, how old are you?
I will be 45 in August.
Yeah, still younger.
Oh, damn it.
43. I know. It's like, it's probably not the best thing.
Yeah, here's your badge.
So you are new to the gym, but you're not new to Parkinson's.
Yeah, I've been going to the gym for about 3 or 4 months, probably 3 months or so. Again, I'm 44, be 45 in August. I was diagnosed at age 40, close to 41, the summer of 2021. Yeah.
How did you figure it out?
So as we were just kind of talking about, I was running marathons, and at the time I was kind of slowing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It wasn't dramatically slower, but about 30 seconds per mile, I felt that I was kind of falling off pace a little bit. So that was just kind of a side symptom. The biggest thing that I would get was just weird things going on in my hands. Like if I pushed down on the window button for my car, getting that window to roll down was tough. My fingers would start to wiggle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I would try to flick my hands out after I went to the bathroom, I couldn't do it with my left hand. It would be stiff. And this wasn't all the time. It was just intermittent. Same thing like telling somebody to cross the street. I was like, couldn't do it. So, you know, I was an orthopedic surgeon. So I went to go talk to a partner of mine because everything, you know, has to go back to orthopedics, you know, what you know. And thought maybe I had a nerve pinched or something like that. So I went to go get a nerve study. And the neurologist that did the nerve study was concerned for Parkinson's. Sent me to a movement disorder specialist, and then I was diagnosed.
Did you have any idea?
No. I was on my lunch break at work, so I was in the middle of a work day, and my crew knew that I was going out to get my EMG, and I came back with that. So, you know, it's kick in the head.
So what is that diagnosis like? Because you're in the medical field, so there's a lot that you understand that we just...
It had been a few years since I studied it. Obviously, I'd seen some patients that had it, and I knew kind of the manifestations of it and the textbook kind of answer of it, but I didn't realize how wide of an array it was in terms of what you see. You know, it affects everybody pretty differently. I didn't know what was coming. It was, you know, obviously just all of us are scared when you first get the diagnosis, and certainly kind of vulnerable in terms of what you should expect. But, you know, it just kind of... It's kind of there, you know, just kind of dealt with it. And I don't know if that was apathy or what, but
what were you most afraid of?
At the time, I'm not really sure, you know, just kind of progressing, being in a wheelchair, you know, not being able to take care of myself, I guess.
Mm.
But you know, at the beginning, I wasn't really even medicated. So I just kind of was treated with some therapy and stuff like that. Then we got into some more medications, some agonists, eventually got on the Sinemet, and, you know, kind of continued to practice medicine and do surgery. I made my administration aware, good attorneys, made the insurance company aware, my surgical assistants and the nurses aware that everything was going on, and they could keep a close eye on me. And if there was ever any kind of time when they thought I needed to call it quits, they would have carte blanche to be able to do so. And it was good. And I continued to practice until January of 2024. And actually, the holidays of 23, I was having some throat pain. I went on a swallow. Mm-hmm. And then in 24 of January, I was diagnosed with throat cancer. So I got to get that on top of this. And so I had to stop working late January of 2024 to go through treatment for chemo and radiation for the throat cancer. And I did that most of the spring last year and got through the summer. And then late July, I got diagnosed with metastatic cancer. So I had to go in and get surgery on my left side of my neck to get those lymph nodes taken out. And ever since then, knock on wood.
You've been battling a lot.
We'll follow up in a month and make sure everything's good. But so far, everything's good. But, you know, that's why I've been out of work for that long. During the summertime, in between the kind of the two treatments, I met with my administration. It was decided it was best not to go back and do surgery, you know, just for a liability and standpoint like
yeah.
that. It was a good time to kind of ease into where I'm at. But actually going back to work in June, hopefully, and going to be treating patients, but not doing surgery.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel like different, like a different doctor now, as like being like talking to a patient, like you can talk to them at a different level? Like, do you feel?
Well, you know, it was interesting because throughout, I didn't really advertise it, obviously, as a surgeon, you know, throughout there was just never really concerned, but I just didn't want to get out in the community that this is a problem.
Yeah.
So I never told anybody, but I had one patient that came in, and she was kind of a known patient of mine that I had replaced her shoulders, and we became a friend. And she came in one time kind of upset, and I said, what's going on? And she said, I was told I had Parkinson's. And I kind of paused for a second, and, you know, I was like, hey, so do I, you know, I have the same thing. And so, you know, we had a moment there, and we became really good friends, and she's the only patient that I actually knew during my career.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of out in the open, so it's not a big deal, but, you know, it was, it's different being on the other side of it, you know, especially going through the cancer treatment. And you know, look at my chart now from 2024, I probably have 120 visits, you know, at different places at Ohio State. So.
Wow.
That's a lot.
I know.
In a short amount of time, really.
Mean, yeah. That's a lot for 1 year, for one person.
Yeah.
You kind of have like two different things going on that I was going to ask. So with taking time off work, usually that reduces stress and helps with your symptoms, but you probably didn't get to see or experience that because you had the stress of the cancer and the treatments, which from what I understand, anytime you go through a traumatic situation or surgeries or whatever, that it brings out more symptoms. So
what you're saying, have I progressed? I think that progressed, at least in terms of maybe the frequency of my off times and, you know, kind of the severity of them. When I'm good, I'm good. You know, I tell people I can do surgery right now, you know, and I'm not lying. I could probably not right now. I feel a little bit stiff, but you know, when I'm good, I'm really good. And then when I'm bad, it's going to be bad sometimes.
Now, about 4 or 5 years when I started getting my off times, are you starting to get those? Or because people used to talk about off times, and I didn't know what they were talking about.
Right, yeah. And it's probably accurate about 4 years in. Well, maybe a little bit quicker than that. You know, probably about the time I was going through the treatment, I started getting a little bit more, you know, it's at the end of the day, just beat, you know, just to the point where I could, you know, really need help standing up. And so I was on medicine at the time, and then you know, we transitioned in February to the Vialev pump, which is this subcutaneous infusion of the medicine, and it was like instant change overnight, you know.
But is it because you weren't very good about taking your medication at the same time every day?
Yes and no. So in the evening, I didn't wake up in the middle of the night to take a medicine. So I took the long acting stuff, which for me it would probably last maybe 4 hours if I was lucky, and I didn't wake up at 1 a.m. and take a second dose. When I did get up at 1 a.m. or 1:30 a.m. to go to the bathroom, I was bad. You know, I have to like run into the wall and catch myself from falling over the toilet and like bouncing off the walls and tripping all over the place. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I was bad. And that first night I took the pump, I was like, walked like a complete normal human being. It was great. So it was the biggest dramatic change I noticed off the bat. And for the most part during the day, it's been pretty well controlled too.
You're talking about. You mentioned the pump. So yeah. You're on the.
Yeah. This is a pump. It's called a Vialev pump. It's basically. It's basically the same drug that you would see in a carbidopa levodopa, but in a liquid form, and it just goes into a little plastic cannula that you put a little needle in your skin every couple of days, and it infuses the medicine that way, and it's constant. So. You don't have too much of those up and down periods. You don't have to worry about eating and drink or eating food protein wise to interfere with the absorption of your medicine. And it's it's bulky. You know,
Do you push any buttons?
You have to change a syringe in here every. So I got 19 hours left in my my medicine. I have to replace it every about 20 hours or so, and change the needle every 2 days or so.
So this is a new fairly new.
This is, yeah, this yeah. just came out.
I think it was FDA approved late in the fall, November, December. So it was, you know, I think I was the second patient that my doctor prescribed it to and the fifth in the whole practice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I don't know what their numbers are up to now. Last time I was there, I think they had 9.
So you, you'd rather stick with this than doing medication?
Well, as you know, and I think you alluded to this in one of the previous, where Mike and Bob were here, about
kind the Mike of, and Bob show.
Yeah. When you're kind of talking about adjusting medications and things like that. And I've done the same thing. You know, I've tried to find that perfect recipe, whether it be with the pills or with this or with a mix and match of the two. And, you know, this is great at nighttime. Sometimes during the day, it just becomes cumbersome to lug around, especially as the summer comes and, you know, be doing some swimming and stuff like that because you can't swim with it on. So I was trying to maybe get to a cocktail where I could take this at nighttime or take the pills during the day, do this at nighttime. And it's just, I don't know. You know, I tried to do that the other day and I woke up, took the needle out, took a couple pills and felt good for a couple hours. But then I was just like, I don't know if I can, you know, experiment with that again and try to figure that out again because it's been a couple months and I forgot.
Because that was my question. Is this that's a steady dose? So are you able to... So mix and match or
well you know I don't know if there's anything published on that in terms of you know like but I think that I've talked to the doctor about it and they've said that there have been discussions about it. Certainly you know you can't have it off for any more than 1 hour before you have to re-stick yourself, and 3 hours I think you have to take a loading dose. So you know it's
I think we should probably even have a disclaimer. We'll probably put this in the beginning too, that you're not getting paid by AbbVie. You're not doing anything for that. This is purely just for our listeners to understand a real life perspective of, you know, a friend of ours who's on Vyalev. So, right. So it's just your thoughts.
Yeah. So how long have you had it?
About 2 months to the date.
So far, what's your...
If I had to give it an A through F grade, I'd give it a B minus right now. You know, it's better than before. If I was giving myself a grade, I'd give myself a C minus, you know, so I'm definitely moving up in the world here, but, you know, it's not the miracle drug. It's an improvement, and it's just so weird. You know, there's still good days and bad days. Yesterday was an amazing day. I was on all day. The day before that, I was kind of up and down. You know, so.
But did you have that before? Did you have up and down days before when you were just on the pills?
I did, but probably more down or less up, I should say. You know, this thing does have a few different settings on it where you can titrate the dosage, so you can hit high, medium, or high baseline, high or low. At nighttime, I switch to low dose. Sometimes if I'm active, I switch to high dose. And actually, I think that for a time, I was probably overdosing on it. You know, when I first got the pump, they do a mathematical formula that allows them to take your oral medication and convert it to the liquid. Mm. And they put it in a computer, and this is what they spit out. And I was very, very, dyskinetic. And so I toned it down, and I felt way better on the lower dose. So I wonder if I was taking too much oral medication before I switched.
How much were you taking orally?
I believe I was taking up to, five of each a day, five long-acting and five immediate release.
Okay.
Plus some pramipexole in between.
What is pramipexole for?
It's an agonist.
So why do people still take the agonist if they're taking the...
You know, that drug was very good for me in terms of when I was on oral treatment. It was very bad for me in terms of some of the side effects it had. You know,
did you gamble?
I gambled a lot.
Did you?
I gambled a lot, yeah. It was kind of right in that time frame where I was going through chemo and radiation. I didn't have a job. My social situation was just like I was by myself for the time. And so I had nobody to answer to. I had no job. I had time. My friends were all working. I was bored. I had some money. I'd go to the casino. And I was going to the casino a lot to the point where I told my doctor, I said, I'm going to need to get off this stuff. And she took me off of it.
How long did it take you to recognize, like, it was the drugs, the medication, I mean?
Well, I think it's a combination of the Parkinson's, too. You know, you win something at the casino and you get a brush of whatever kind of dopamine's left. You know, you get that, you know. So that plus the drug and everything else. You'd be amazed that you see how many people at the casino table you see with a tremor. You know, I don't know if they all have Parkinson's, but there's a lot of people there that look like it. Yeah.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Kind of walking around like it.
This guy.
Yeah.
He goes.
I don't know if I've seen you there, but I banned myself. I went to the security guard. I said, I can't come back here. So wow. I went through a process where I'm not allowed to go back.
Wow. Yeah. I have not gotten that point yet.
Yeah. Well, because I was on Rapinoril.
Yeah.
So I got, my addiction was to working.
Yeah.
So I had to get off of that and take time off work.
Well, I think that's probably transitioned into working for me too, because I'm nonstop working on projects in my house and things like that. It's bad.
Yeah, it's like weird. We get this like
therapeutic, I guess. What else am I going to do?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, but you're saying too, it's like it's that dopamine or serotonin, like that word, that what we don't have or lacking.
So, back to the pump reader real quick.
Yep.
What would you say the best two or three things that
Well, the best thing that I notice is the kind of the constant control at nighttime. You know, for me, to wake up feeling good. Every day I wake up feeling good, and that usually it's kind of a cyclical thing. So every day I wake up at probably 4, and I feel pretty good until about 7, and then if I'm at the gym, usually it's about right when I get started on the workout is when I kind of loosen back up again. So about 2 hours of kind of stiffness before I loosen back up, and it's a lot of dystonia. I have a lot of my left arm's always fighting to stay straight. It's always supposed to be flexed. My left big toe is driving itself into the ground, and it's really uncomfortable, and so you have to, I kind of walk around and force myself to do this. And by the time I kind of get going in the gym and into the warm up, I'm usually somewhat better. And then about midway through the workout, I kind of calm down and get better for the rest of the day until about after dinner time. Then I just kind of hit the wall.
Well, like with sleeping though, like, I mean, I roll around. I feel like I'm like, I toss, I turn. Like, how do you?
But you got those magic sheets, though, too.
Magic sheets.
You get the magic sheets that allow you to do that.
Do you have those yet?
I have not.
Oh my gosh.
What are these?
They're called Comfort Linens. We had a podcast about it, but a woman who created them, it's literally like a regular bed sheet, but then there's like this rectangle in the middle that it's not just silk, but the way the way that she created it is that so you can easily slide off or flip over in bed. So it's actually, it was originally for like elderly people. But then, she started noticing like people with Parkinson's, it's helpful. Cause we get so stiff of trying to turn and move.
Yeah.
So I mean, I love them.
And but you ever get traction on it? You know, it's
no, so they there's a perimeter actually, so that the silk part is only in a certain, because that was a question that people said. They're like, so how do you just not just like fly off?
So hot.
But there's like a border around it.
Coming in hot.
But still, seriously, so do you keep it on your nightstand? Do you keep it in bed?
I sleep like a soldier, a statue now, so I'm just like plopping right next to me.
That was one of the big concerns that people had.
That's my concern.
Yeah, when they first got it, like that cord,
it's about 3 feet long, maybe 2.5 feet long. It's
getting it wrapped around you.
It's stuck right now, it's 3 feet long.
Do you ever feel like if you're like walking by somebody, like, and if someone's too close, that they're gonna like rip it out?
So this morning I went to visit my buddy, and his dog jumped up on me and got his paw caught on it and almost yanked it out of my stomach. But I've had it yanked out a couple times, and that's not fun.
You don't know it.
Sometimes you don't even know it, and you don't get any medicine for a couple hours. You're like, what? Going on, you look down and it's dangling or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's bulky, you know. It's I'm fortunate that I can just put it in my pocket. If I was a lady and I was wearing a skirt or something like that, and there was nowhere to put it, I don't know what you'd do. So
yeah.
So you told us that you like the best about it. What are some issues or some of the struggles you had with?
Well, you know, just as I just mentioned, it's cumbersome. You know, it's big. You look at some. I actually went to TSA, and the guy said, "What is that thing? Is it an insulin pump?" And "He said that's huge." You know, so you look at the insulin pumps, which are probably a third of the size of this. It's got a 10 cc syringe in it, and I don't know what the concentration is of the medication, but I think that they could probably take double the concentration of the medication and maybe make a smaller syringe and kind of turn this down.
Yeah, it just like boggles my mind that it's like if that I don't want to call it technology, but that product or whatever,
right.
of a smaller, like for insulin. It's out there.
Right.
So why are we not?
Like one of those old cell phones. You think
I know.
Strike it down some.
Actually, yeah. Looks like
Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, a Nintendo Switch.
And television. Yeah. Uh-huh. Really old. Yeah. But so, you know, the bulkiness of it, I guess it's free. So that saves money on some drugs.
But it's only free if only, you.
Yeah, with an asterisk, right? So you have to be younger than 62 or 63, I think. Uh-huh. And you can't, if you have to have private insurance too. So you can't have, you know, government insurance at this point. And they're going to do some changes to that. So I don't think it's covered by insurance, but I don't.
Yeah, it's not. I think it's like that. It's like the first 2 years. So the first year will be up this like October, and then there's another year.
Yeah, so they're hoping that we get hooked on it. And
But which is unfortunate because, you know, I know for us it's like clunky. But remember my friend that we had on before, Major, and he had what was it called before? Like the pump that you had to have the surgery for? Duopa.
Yeah.
So, but for him, like, you know, who had to go in and get that all like done surgically, this would be a godsend, but he can't get it yet because he's over.
So when I was going through cancer, I had a feeding tube. I had a peg tube in my stomach, and that was traumatic. Yeah, that was last spring. So it was the same thing, wearing t-shirts. So you had this bulky thing sticking out of your stomach, and it was tough. This kind of brings you back a little bit to that.
Yeah.
Some PTSD, because you do still have it sticking out of your stomach, and, you know, hide it in a loose shirt is kind of tough. You know, it's always hanging out in my pocket.
So what would you say to people who want to try it?
Well, again, I'm still doing it. So, you know, that's a testament, I guess, to say that it's going to be an improvement upon what I had. So if you fit the mold and you think you can tolerate the work associated with it and the pocket load or however you're going to carry it around, why not? Especially if you're in the category of getting it taken care of by AbbVie for free. Yeah. That's how I started. I said it's worth a shot for, you know, a month or two and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk to my doctor and see if we can maybe do some finagling of this recipe and see if we can get something a little bit more consistent.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough, you know, and you don't really know exactly what you're going to get into.
It's kind of like, it sounds like probably a dumb question, but like, let's say you decide not to continue doing it. Do you like return the thing?
I don't know. They deliver these packages, these two giant boxes to you once a month. One has a drug in it and one has the supplies. And because I'm on such a lower dose than I was originally prescribed, I get so much more medication than I need right now, so many more supplies than I need right now. And I actually delayed my last shipment probably by 3 weeks, and I still have probably twice as much than I need. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I would do with that stuff. If percent send it back, I'm guessing. I'm sure they could refurbish it.
So going back to your point earlier about DBS, because I know you're, that's your path and you highly recommend it. Is that something that you've looked into or that you would?
Again, I haven't done too much research on it at this point, just because of my basic understanding. This is at this point, probably 2011, so 14-year-old when I studied it last, understanding of it. So no, I haven't, it's never been brought up in discussion with my doctor. So,
okay.
You know, if it ever is, we'll talk about that. You know, get the ultrasound, the magnetic, the MRI ultrasound.
Yeah.
Talk about things like that might look into. But at this point, you know, we're going to continue this. And like I said, hopefully maybe titrate a mix. I don't know if the insurance company will like that. If I'm doing it halftime versus full-time with trying to get medicine and I still have a pretty good stash of carbidopa, believe it open in my medicine cabinet.
I think everybody does. My God.
I know. I've got
18 different bottles.
I know.
I've got extended release. I've got regular. I haven't been on the stuff since I've had DBS.
Right. Yeah.
I've got more
Rytary.
Rytary than I know what to do with. I paid a lot for that Rytary. I don't want it to go to waste.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. What do you think about the gym and the workouts you do there?
I think the gym is great. You know, this is actually kind of roundabout way, two different ways I kind of came into the gym. So this podcast, for one, like I said, it was probably the fourth or so episodes where I realized that you guys were local.
Ohio.
Yeah, I was right down the street the whole time from this podcast, and I didn't realize that until I was watching it a few times, and then I think Melissa was on it. And so I knew of the gym at that point. And at the time, my neighbor, her mom moved in from out of town, and she started coming to the gym, and she'd tell me about it, so I heard from her. And then it just kind of came together. But the gym is great. You know, obviously, you know, the people at the gym are amazing. You know, I stand up in the front so I can see her in the mirror. And it's just crazy how how well everybody does these workouts, you know, and everybody's got their own kind of different way it affects them. And but everybody really comes through and I feel like I'm dogging it most of the time, looking at everybody in the rear view there, because they get through the workouts when I'm resting, you know?
Yeah.
And then everybody walks out and they're always smiling. Nobody looks like they're in a bad mood when they leave. They all call me by my name. I feel bad because I don't know everybody's name yet. So, you know, I look at the board and try to study people, but.
Did it scare you?
Or? Yeah. That's why, you know, I kind of hesitated to go because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't want to go up there and see what, that's why I feel like going to the doctor sometimes, you know, walking in the waiting room, I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was concerned. And it was nothing but the opposite of that. You know, everybody's, yeah. Even if they're in worse shape than others, do pretty well, you know, to see people.
For me, it was always impressive to watch these people that have had this disease, and they're in their 70s, and they had longer than I had. They're working out more than what I am.
It's great.
Well, but I think that the biggest part of this, or the reason why it is like that, is because, you know, Melissa treats us like she would any other trainer.
You're right. You're
like,
right.
You know, it's not like
they're not easy workouts.
You know, okay, well, we're gonna try like this, and you know, no, it's completely opposite, and I think that's what we need.
I think I said this last time on one of the podcasts, is those constant reminders. You're not just moving, but it's big movement. And, you know, her just that she'll be like, okay, reach all the way up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those verbal cues that we get, like, okay, I'm not reaching all the way up. You know, she'll call you out when you miss it. Or open your hand, you know, open your arms all the way out. Take big steps. Pick your feet up. You know, those things that as we get in bad habits of doing.
Yeah.
Just having those
kinds. That's kind of the therapeutic aspect of it, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of adding to the workout.
Yeah, and the sense of community there, I think, is second to none.
No question.
I mean, you know, we can ask Nick about the pump. You can ask me about DBS. You can ask you about the 15 medications that you've tried. And, you know, who's working, who's not working, what's working, what's not working.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. This is a very impressive setup.
This is Steve. I mean,
100%.
So, and that this is where, like, I'm Steve. I'm talking to you, but I'm talking to everybody out there. This podcast would not be anything as to what it is without Steve and Melissa. I know you're back there too. But in all seriousness, like, you know, to your point, we share these stories. And we could have done that on our phones, which is what we originally thought we were going to do when we were like, let's start a podcast. But just the way that the message is getting out to people and their responses to it, it's so fulfilling. Like, I don't know if you ever read any of the comments, but like, just, you know, we're reaching people that don't have the resources in the community like we do.
Yeah.
And I just think that is just so amazing. So thanks, Steve. Everybody say thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. So with that, I still have a 30 second. So in our last 30 seconds, I'll leave you with this. Like I said earlier, we are always just here as patients. We are not doctors. We do not work for any organization that is promoting products. We're simply just sharing our perspective, our experiences, just to provide more insight and information to you all. So just like, you know, the Beach Band is a tool, DBS is a tool, so is Vialiv. I mean, all the medications, anything like that. So always consult with your doctor and exercise, and tune in next time. Thanks. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is produced by Melissa Carlson and Steve Brandenburg. To contact us, email info@thesecretlifeofpd.org. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not responsible or liable for any medical advice, diagnosis, course of treatment, or any other information obtained through this podcast. The information provided by The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. You are encouraged to consult a physician for a definitive diagnosis.
Thank you. If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money, like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.